I am mining investor and editor of Resource Stock Digest, Gerardo Del Real, here with a very special guest today. Mr. Hodge is out. He will be missed. However, I got the VP of Exploration for Q2 Metals, which is on absolute fire, Mr. Neil McCallum. This is the 360th episode of our weekly therapy session that we call Investing in Bizarro World. There's a lot going on. Look, by the time we're done with this in the next hour, we might not be here. Gold might be up $300, down $300. Mm-hmm. Ditto for silver, ditto for the dollar index, ditto for oil. But that is the world we live in. Before we get into all of that, Neil, how are you today?
I'm really good, thanks. Yeah. No, thanks for having me on again. It's been a while.
Well, listen, Q2 right now is the bell of the lithium ball. And I want to thank you because I know that you're busy in between conferences and drilling and a lot of catalysts upcoming. But Q2 has been extremely kind to me personally and extremely kind to our shareholders. I first got involved with the company when it was called, I want to say it was like Queensland Gold Hills, right? And it's very interesting to me because much like PMET, which started with a project that wasn't a lithium project, Q2 started, or Queensland Gold Hills started, with a project that was not a lithium project. And fast forward to 2026, you are in the midst of finalizing a maiden resource estimate that I actually got a little bit of a wager on. I'll share an inside joke that me and a couple of colleagues have going on. I believe, and I'm biased because we own both, right? I believe that PMET, when it's all said and done, will be the single most valuable critical metals company in James Bay. I simultaneously believe that Q2 Metals will have the single biggest lithium-only resource in James Bay. And I say all that to say, we don't have to hedge our bets. You could own both, folks, because I'm pretty confident that whether or not that shakes out, both companies are likely headed much higher. For those not familiar with the history of Cisco, can you please take us back a little bit, Neil, and just give us a little history there? Because you've been involved with both projects, PMETS and now Cisco, obviously, here with Q2.
Yeah, well, it's funny you say that about Q2. It's really baked into the name, Queensland Gold Hills, turned into Q2 Metals because of Queensland Gold Project. We moved into Quebec in about 2023. So, you know, we have to do the name change to sort of rebrand ourselves from a gold company to what becomes a lithium company. So
yeah,
Quebec, Queensland, Q2, there you go. So that started right about the time when lithium was last really taking off, that last real big spike when everybody was looking. It was called Patriot at the time, now PMET.
Correct.
Was, you know, well on their way of drilling. I think they were probably at their resource estimate or PA level at that time. And we had just sort of, you know, moved on to a lithium project in James Bay as well. It looked really good at the time. And it was one of those weird years where we didn't do any work because the whole summer was caught up in forest fire season. So we got out there for like 2 days of work. We couldn't get back out there until the fall, at which time we started our drilling and kind of realized that it wasn't that good of a project at that time. It looked really good at surface. We drilled it and said, well, hey, there's not as much lithium here as we thought there was. So, you know, I asked around and talked to a few people and what else we could look at. And the Cisco project was presented as a concept at that time. It was being looked at by a few other bigger companies, by the property vendors at the time. And he said, well, can't show it to you yet, but as soon as these people say no, then we'll present it to you. So that's what happened.
Bigger companies that are probably looking again now, and we'll talk about that later, the potential for a buyout, but we'll save that for a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. So it's kind of funny that it all comes around full circle. So the same group that we actually got that original project from, we built a lot of trust with them by executing a successful exploration program, but sometimes the rocks aren't what you hope they're going to be. And they kind of saw us successful on the money raising side, which I can give full credit to Alicia and your team for that. And then, you know, we did a good exploration program, but didn't find what we wanted. And we had to move on to a different project because we didn't want to keep sinking money into a project that we knew didn't have potential. So once we saw the first little bits of information from Cisco, it's one of those ones where we knew we had to have it. We just This is good. Location is perfect. It's so much more advantageous than a lot of the other James Bay projects, which we can get into as well. But again, it's those lithium intervals. It's close to the highway. It's just so many green flags at that time. So, but the issue was that the lithium price, right when we bought it, started to crash, and everyone thought we were insane. So, maybe taking the contrarian view on that, we stuck to our, we branded ourselves as a lithium company, so we stuck to it and got another lithium project, which turned out, even better than that first one. So.
Now, look, I tell subscribers because I still cover Q2 in the letter. We've owned it since the 30-cent level. Obviously,
Holy.
I participated in the Queensland financing at the 15-cent level, but I tell everybody, and I had to preach this during the downturn in the lithium space for those couple of years. Quality companies and quality management will add value regardless of the type of market you have. You have to stay in the game to see it through. We knew that structural deficits would develop and are going to continue to develop in the lithium space. It was only a matter of time. What I got to commend you and Alicia and the team for at Q2 for doing so well was adding value regardless of what the lithium price was doing. And the other thing, frankly, and I know Alicia negotiated the heck out of this, a lot of credit to her as well, but expanding the project when frankly a lot of people were just running away from lithium and projects, you all had the foresight to get in there and say, we actually want it to expand the scale and the size of the project. And I think that's proven pivotal in recent exploration and likely for future buyout scenarios.
Well, that makes a lot of sense too. I mean, the best time to buy into a project is when nobody cares about that commodity. Because these things, I've been in mining long enough to see so many cycles and so many commodities that it'll come around again. So the best time to buy it is when nobody cares about it, and kind of just stack your cards and wait, just wait.
Let's talk about the project now. You are at a critical juncture. You are in the midst of, you're about to publish a maiden resource estimate, and it was slightly delayed, but for good reason. Champagne problems is what I like to call it, right? It was delayed because you keep hitting these insane intercepts, and it's I can't imagine how difficult it is to draw a cutoff and say we don't want to include these new fantastic intercepts that we have. That had to have been difficult, but let me read off some of the more recent exploration success. I was blown away on the February 24th release when you hit 170.2 meters of 1.99% lithium, right? And that included 40.1 meters of 2.89%. We're now in the midst of waiting for multiple 200 meter intervals of continuous spodumene. And look, I mean, drill hole 71, 8 spodumene pegmatite intervals with the widest continuous interval of 264.6 meters, followed by another additional 152.9 meters of continuous spodumene pegmatite. How special are those types of intercepts? When you see that core come out, I cannot imagine how excited the team gets.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. I mean, well, it's becoming the norm now, but last summer was the real true test, because you kind of find one and you think, oh wow, that's amazing. You must have hit a structure. We're drilling right into it, and then you step out another 200 meters, 400 meters, and the system just kept on going along strike. And I think we were all kind of surprised and pleased, of course, of
Yeah.
those, intervals that just kept coming up along strike. And when you compare those types of intervals across others in the industry, it's just, leaps and bounds above other intervals out there. Like, people are mining 10 meter, 20 meter wide veins, and here we are, like, that's waste rock basically to us. Like, those are veins that we ignore to the side of this big body in the middle. So,
I
building for
laugh,
this.
but I laugh because I feel bad for some of the other companies that look like they're getting quality hits, right? 20 meters, 30 meters of 1%, 1.5%. And I think PMET did it initially. It was an embarrassment of riches. And then Q2 comes in with Cisco. And again, I think when other companies now are putting out what used to be quality intercepts and quality mineralization and methodically building out a geologic model that can be valuable, especially now with lithium coming back. And in the last, you know, several quarters, you see the trend there. It's got to be tough when you're seeing releases like this spoil the market.
Yeah. I mean, I think there was a lot of skepticism at first when we first put out those results. Oh, you guys are drilling down dip, you know, into the structure. And then we kind of proved it wrong with drilling in different directions to kind of prove that up. And now we're doing the infill drilling, which really locks in the story to get to that mineral resource that, you know, is you can bank some of it. It's the first one. It's going to have the lowest level of confidence that we use in sort of those categorized terms. So we're already doing the drilling to prove it up to the next level of confidence, which is the indicated and then measured and all that kind of stuff, where we get into the more technical stuff where we zone in on certain areas. So it's all fun work, but you know, it really does hold up across the entire zone, which is quite good to see. And not only that, like, it's so close to infrastructure. Like,
that was gonna be my next point. You got it. Like,
you can have a project like that in the middle of nowhere, and you can have world-class intercepts really far away from highways and potential infrastructure network, like the rail that's close to us. So, but that key component is it's a bulk commodity. You're mining a lot of it. It's a lot of tons that you put through a mill, and a lot of tons that you're going to be putting on trucks. So that infrastructure piece just becomes so important with the lithium and our location farther south within James Bay makes it that much easier to get it to the rail. And then once you're on rail, you can get to other parts of Quebec and shipping networks within the St. Lawrence region. So
the initial exploration target had a range potential between 215 to 329 million tons at a grade ranging from 1 to 1.38% lithium. On a global scale, how significant a resource would that be if it comes anywhere in between those numbers? I know you can't comment because we're likely days and weeks away from the actual number. But let's just, in a hypothetical world, that it's anywhere near either of those two numbers or somewhere in between.
Yeah.
How globally significant is that, given the infrastructure advantages, given
right.
James Bay really, really making it? You know, I think there's been a renaissance in exploration in James Bay over the last 5 years. And I think that's going to accelerate, you know, with other commodities as well here this year and years to come. But how significant would that be to come in anywhere near that as a first pass made in resource estimate?
Yeah, for the lower bracket, so like the lower 215 million tons, that puts us in the top 10 global hard rock lithium. And then if it's the upper range, the 329, that's within the top five global lithium projects. So, you know, obviously we're going to put that number out very soon. I can't speak to that until it's officially out. But to have that as your first resource estimate with 2 years of drilling, I think it's pretty outstanding.
It's absolutely exceptional.
It's a very fresh project. Like, the first rock samples were 2022, first drill holes in 2023. And then, like, that was only six holes. And then we put our first drill holes in 2024. So the good thing about hitting, like, on average, like 50% mineralized material within your drilling is that you can build a resource pretty quickly with those sort of statistics. When you're drilling a, you know, 200 meter hole to hit a 20 meter target, the drilling statistics go down. You have to spend more time, more money drilling and defining these things. But luckily, that advantage of having just those big intervals like you were talking about allows us to catch up to those other projects out there in James Bay that have been in existence for, some of them, you know, 10, 15 years in James Bay that, you know, have gone through multiple feasibility studies and aren't quite there yet. There's a lot of advanced stage projects up there, but none of them have gone into any real production yet.
You mentioned when you secured the project that there were major companies looking at Cisco that passed on it. And I'll just speculate that a lot of that was major companies, you know, aren't the most eager or keen to get into exploration of this kind, right? Had they known the prize, I guarantee you they would have been in there. I think they have an idea of the prize now. So I know you can't comment on specific companies, but I was at a lunch in Vancouver when you were outlining, you know, what 2026 was going to look like. And there were some very interesting majors there. And I won't say any names because it's, you know, I'll keep it to myself. There were some very, very interesting majors sitting right nearby. And look, this was an early breakfast, Joe. I think it was like a 7-8 in the morning breakfast. And if you know anything about mining people, folks, they don't like to get up at 6 or 7 in the morning to get into a stuffy hotel and go look at a presentation. They were eager to be there. How many of those companies, or let me ask you a better question. I'm assuming that several of those companies have called, and I'm assuming that there's probably dialogue going on, and you probably have a lot of eyes on this maiden resource estimate and the drilling and the assays that you have pending now, because as you said, the drills are turning and the work continues, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's safe to say, I won't get into specifics.
Sure.
You know, it's a tricky territory, but
yeah,
a lot of people know about our project, and a lot of people have been looking at it, following us, so we don't really need to market ourselves to, you know, potential merger and acquisition companies. They know who we are and they've been following us quite well. I think, like you mentioned, when the property vendors were looking at it, I think, it was just too early stage, too much risk for them. Because they're not exploration companies for the most part. They may have an exploration division.
Sure.
But they want to have an asset that they can actually put value on too.
Sure.
And I think that, you know, it's been quite good for the property vendors. They've sort of shared our success. Whereas I think at the time, they just probably would have had more of an all cash sort of a situation where they don't see much of the upside. So I think we've really just, you know, created value for all shareholders even before this project, which is nice to see, like yourself back in the early days.
Yeah.
So it's kind of neat to see the success building that, you know, as we advance it, it's just going to get, you know, a benchmark for value, because people have a hard time evaluating companies that don't have a resource yet, which
Correct.
Is where we're at. People don't really rely on exploration targets, which are a bracket of this and that, and
Sure.
just a mistrust of an exploration target for some people, where they don't have strict guidelines on how those numbers are prepared. And I think we were even on the conservative end of exploration target, for what we published. So yeah, I think we're at that point where we've got a lot of attention on us.
I have to believe there's an eagerness, because I've heard the takeout whispers and rumors, and you know, the whispers and rumors that I know you won't confirm or deny are that there's no way in hell that this sells at anywhere close to where the price is right now. I don't think the share price appreciation over the last 52 weeks has been an accident. You've done exceptional work, but there has to be an eagerness, Neil, to drill the heck out of this thing and expand it as quickly as possible before you start getting those real serious offers that I think are coming down the line in the not too distant future.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're just building value. The more we drill into it, the more we put numbers out and grow the resource, the more we can just, it's a no brainer of like the money that we raise on the public markets and the money that we put into the ground, we're building value there. We're not drilling for the sake of drilling. We're not at that stage where, you know, we will eventually get to those more engineering level studies where you know, it kind of the most valuation of companies start to level out, but we're still building value, I think, at this level. Yeah, I think you're definitely right there.
Well, listen, you have drills turning, you have assays pending on some of the best continuous intercepts of spodumene that I've ever seen on any project. You have the maiden resource estimate coming up. I can't wait for that. Looking forward to having you back on. Before I let you go, what do you see for James Bay as far as exploration and development here over the next several years? You now have, you know, the PMETs of the world, the Q2s of the world, several other companies that I speculate there's going to be a lot of M&A in the James Bay region, a consolidation of, you know, gold projects and maybe lithium projects and critical metals projects to provide the kind of scale that the region is going to need to attract the attention of, you know, more Volkswagens and more companies that are looking to establish permanent infrastructure to supply the critical metals and the precious metals that we're going to need, you know, in the now and in the future. How do you see James Bay development playing out over the next several years?
Well, that's just it. I think that right now we've got, you know, it's a one company, one project sort of a situation, with the exception of Rio Tinto, who now has previously Nemaska Lithium's Whabouchi project and now also Galaxy project. So that's sort of two projects that I think they're trying to weigh out which one to push forward. But I think it's there's definitely room market wise to put more than one of these into production. And I think it's not really a race to the finish. I think it's going to be the better project gets put into production, because the only projects that are getting funding now are those that are real projects that have real potential. Those ones that, you know, are maybe too far away from infrastructure or, you know, might have too much CapEx to actually put into production might not make it. And then maybe earlier stage projects, which don't have good results so far, might not get funding. So, it's a real, you know, 2 years ago, 3 years ago, any lithium project that didn't even have pegmatite on their project could raise $5 million, $10
million. Yeah, you just had to say you were looking for pegmatite. You could raise the money.
Yeah, basically. Yeah, pegmatite or lithium in the name, company name, you could raise money, right? So we're not at that level anymore. It's they're serious players. And I think there's definitely a need for consolidation, because you can really build a hub and spoke model with downstream processing as one big thing, a big piece of the puzzle, which Quebec is really trying to encourage as well with the Bécancour facility, where they're taking the concentrate and turning that into the lithium products.
No, listen, you're in the driver's seat. I'm looking forward to having you back on. Thank you so much for your time today. Again, assay spending, drills turning, resource estimate right around the corner, potential for M&A. And I think it's going to be a heck of a 2026, especially in light of an improving lithium market, which I think, you know, has a lot of legs here moving forward.
Yeah, the higher gas prices sure help. People are thinking about EV cars again, right?
Imagine that. Yeah. Imagine that. Yeah. Neil, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it.
Of course.
Take care out there. We'll chat soon.
Okay. Bye now.
Neil McCallum, everybody. That was great. Look, one of the premier lithium exploration and development companies in the space. They got the jurisdiction. They got the team. They got the infrastructure. They're cashed up. They clearly have a tiger by the tail on the exploration front. So, look, a lot to like there. Let's get into the commodity space and what's going on. Look, it's been an absolutely crazy, just... wild week, right? We've had gold here in the past month down from 40, as low as 4,100 and as high as 4,800, and look to be flirting with the $5,000 level before the bombs once again started flying. We're sitting there right around the $4,800 level right now. Gold looks bullish to me. Nick will be back next week. He's the technician and the chartist amongst the two of us. But if I know Nick, and I know Nick a little bit, he would say gold is bullish all the way down to that $4,300, $4,200 level, which, again, it flirted with it and it bounced right off of it. That's extremely bullish on my side of things. Silver, you know, silver's in a little bit more precarious position. It's at $75.50, $76. Near term, I think it's kind of neutral. In the mid to long term, absolutely bullish. And again, that could turn on a dime for the simple fact that, you know, we're not just dealing with an administration right now that is volatile at best, and I'm being kind. We're dealing with a partner, an ally in Israel that just decides, and President Trump talked about this just half an hour ago, decides kind of at their own whim what they're going to do and when they're going to do it, right? It wasn't even an hour after President Trump announced that a deal had been mediated by Pakistan to reopen the strait and to negotiate a ceasefire, that Israel launched one of the biggest bombing campaigns on Lebanon. And again, this isn't me speaking. This is a president speaking half an hour ago. He said his words were he was fucking pissed at both Iraq and Israel, and that wasn't the plan, and that it didn't look good for them to negotiate a ceasefire and a truce in good faith. And an hour later, you're initiating some of the what he said was some of the most aggressive bombing that he's ever seen. So hoping that calmer minds prevail, it's great to hear that someone in the Trump administration is at least voicing an opinion that maybe shutting off, you know, a large chunk of the world's energy inputs, maybe raising fertilizer prices to farmers, maybe, you know, fracturing alliances with allies that we've had for decades on end. Maybe that's not the smartest approach. And if you want to be cynical and just not look at it from like a human perspective, if you want to look at it from an economics perspective, surely in the heck doesn't make sense. If you want to be even more cynical and look at it from a political perspective, and everyone knows I'm not a fan of either of the two major parties. It's funny that I find myself agreeing in 2026 with people that I disagreed vehemently with for the past several years. And a lot of those people are even starting to come around and kind of see the writing on the wall. And again, if you want to be cynical, it just doesn't even make sense for Trump and the Republican Party to be crippling the global economy, to be fracturing alliances, to be crippling our economy. The GDP growth numbers that just came out were absolutely atrocious. Everybody's pumping gas and feeling it at the pump. Everybody has to go to the grocery store. Europe is in the midst of an energy crisis as a result of all this. So I'm hoping that if anything, just to try to save some seats in the midterms, cooler voices prevail and calmer heads prevail. I am not, and I'm usually the optimistic one, folks, but I'm not inclined to believe that that is how this ends up going. Although I believe that what's happened in the last several weeks in terms of oil spiking to 117, spiking to 142 in the futures, the pullback in the markets, the outburst of independent, I'll call them independent, media coming out against it. Nobody seemingly being able to make any sense of why we're doing this outside of we're fighting a war that for Israel that Israel has wanted to fight against Iran for decades on end since its existence, right? And so, look, a lot to be cautious about. I think volatility is going to continue. I don't think that that subsides anytime soon. I hope, I really, really, really do hope I am wrong about that. But again, the trends are clear. The trends are gold goes higher, silver goes higher, copper goes higher. For all the fundamental reasons that Nick and I have listed here in the past. So I would encourage everyone, I wrote an editorial this past week encouraging everyone to phase out the noise, even if the noise can be tough to phase out because of the human toll, because of the casualties, because of the images, you know, and then second to that, because of the economic consequences of, you know, this nonsensical war to me. I would encourage everybody to phase out some of that noise in regards to your positions, in regards to what you own, and in regards to what the next, not just couple of months look like, but what do the next several years look like? And whether it's central bank demand for gold because of the debasement of currencies around the world, whether it's infrastructure build outs, and now we're going to have, you know, entire countries and regions that are going to have to be rebuilt. The data centers, there was an article this week that, you know, half of the data centers that were scheduled to commence construction in 2026 will be either delayed or canceled. That's not a surprise. Nick and I have been saying that to you folks here for years, that the tech bros and their AI ambitions were only so reasonable because of the finite supply of the inputs, the copper, the uranium, the water, the rising energy costs that are going to get passed along. Here in Texas, you know, we've got several data centers coming up. We have Tesla doing robot exhibits here every month or two. I see driverless Waymos running around. All of that stuff requires a lot of energy inputs, and we frankly just don't have the supply to keep up with that over the next several years. So them delaying centers and projects isn't a surprise. The reason why should tell you and signal to you that the structural reasons, the fundamental reasons why copper and silver and lithium and uranium and gold with the currency debasement around the world will continue higher. So down moves in the gold price, $200-$300 to the downside and the upside would not surprise me. Silver going back to $70 or $69 wouldn't surprise me. It also wouldn't surprise me to wake up and see gold above $5,000, silver above $80 firmly, copper back above $575, regaining a bull market there. So keep an eye on it for sure. Phase out the noise, know what you own, and know why you own it, and set yourself a timeline. Sound like a broken record, but that really is the process, and that is the way to kind of move forward with positions during what has been one of the most volatile several months. I think in a lot of traders' trading careers, especially if what you do is exclusively the sandbox that I play in, which is the resource space. So I'll leave you with that. I want to thank Neil for coming on. I want to get to the premium portion of the podcast. There's some good stuff to like out there. Hopefully some of today made some sense. We're missing Mr. Hodge. Looking forward to having him back next week. I'm really excited to get his take on everything that's been going on. I hope everyone has themselves a great, great, great rest of the week and a great weekend. Let's get to the premium portion of the podcast, everybody. I am Gerardo Del Real. Again, I want to thank Mr. Neil McCallum for coming on as a special guest. This was the 360th episode of our weekly therapy session we call Investing in Bizarro World. Take care out there, everyone.